It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are still fewer than 100 hours into the second administration of President Donald Trump. And as expected, it has been a blizzard of news. Earlier this week, we heard on this show, the 21st show, from Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker about his early reactions.
His first actions are causing chaos and confusion. Some of the executive orders that he has issued appear to violate the rule of law. I'm deeply concerned because, look, my job is to make sure that we're managing the state of Illinois properly, that we're protecting the people of the state of Illinois, and that the federal government is, working to advance our cause. And that all seems in jeopardy with this administration just 24 hours in.
Joining me now to make sense of what has been a very significant week in American politics and history is Linda Kenyon, Illinois Public Media's Washington correspondent. Linda, good to be talking with you again.
Yes, good to be back after a head-spinning couple of weeks.
I can imagine. So let's start with some of the executive orders that President Trump took in his first days, really his first hours in office. One of the biggest foci has been immigration. He has suspended asylum. He's allowed members of the military to act as immigration officers. What have been the early results of some of these actions?
Well, there's been a lot of pushback, but I hearken to remind people that these are all things that President Trump said he was going to do when he was on the campaign trail. So they should come as no surprise. However, a lot of these actions have been, panned and certainly criticized, certainly by a lot of members of the Democratic side of the aisle. And, of course, you heard your governor, Pritzker, expressing some concerns as well. A lot of them, the day one pardons, by the way, the day one, the executive orders were about 200. So this is a process of what we call in the biz flooding the zone. So it's kind of hard to keep track of everything all at once. But certainly on the immigration front, the executive orders have caused quite a bit of consternation. For example, mass deportations. Some deportations have gone, have already begun, although I would not know if they would be classified as mass deportations. People who are who have been detained but not necessarily convicted, for example, in the past of crimes such as shoplifting. The new president had said that he was going to invoke mass deportations, not making the distinction between violent criminal acts and those who've committed no criminal acts at all.
And we did hear Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, had indicated that cities like Chicago would be among the first targets of this. Have we seen? I haven't seen anything materializing in Chicago, at least, on this front. I don't know if you have a broader national perspective on where these things are happening.
Well, one of the things that I wouldn't say Chicago per se, I have not seen any concentration going on there, although that was one of the threats, if you will, one of the promises, depending on your point of view. The Department of Homeland Security has been authorized to carry out arrests at what have been deemed sensitive locations, which were not allowed during the Biden administration. And these sensitive locations that we were seeing and are seeing so far include schools, churches, and businesses. Right now, the Customs Enforcement, Immigration and Customs Enforcement says it's made 538 arrests. And it has lodged 373 detainers, it says, as of last night. And the border czar, Tom Homan, says, as we said from day one, no one is off the table. If you are in the United States illegally, you have a problem. And we're focusing on public safety threats first, he said.
Well, on this area of immigration and citizenship, one of the other executive orders purported that it ended birthright citizenship, which is in the U.S. Constitution. This has been challenged by Illinois and a number of other states. The ACLU has also stepped up to challenge this. The case that Illinois is a part of was heard in court in Seattle on Thursday. There was a judge who blocked the executive order, calling it, quote unquote, blatantly unconstitutional. What's your early impression of where some of these challenges are going on Trump's actions in his first days in office?
Well, the challenge is certainly with regard to birthright citizenship. It is now up to 22 states and two cities, San Francisco and Washington, D.C., have all sued President Trump over his efforts to basically roll back the Constitution's 14th Amendment. Here's what that amendment says, by the way. It says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. So you can't just, with an executive order, repeal a constitutional amendment. It's a process, and it's not an easy process. And it could take years, even decades, to add a constitutional amendment and to strike down a constitutional amendment. The president has said he was surprised that this would be challenged. But so the judge in Seattle in particular saying, I have difficulty understanding how a member of the bar could state unequivocally that this is a constitutional order. It boggles my mind. This is the judge, by the way, who has served 40 years as a jurist. And he was appointed by President Reagan. Donald Trump attacked the judge, calling him a liberal judge, and saying, well, of course, you know, it was in Seattle, so you would expect that a judge would challenge me on that.
Mm. Well, Reagan Republicans have been somewhat on the outs in the new MAGA Republican Party, it seems, mm-hmm. of late. Mm-hmm. All right, one of the most significant things, and I guess it strikes me because it's happened, right? It's not an order that could happen or is being implemented or is being challenged. It's done. Trump has pardoned, you know, 1,500 or so people who took part in the January 6th attack at the U.S. Capitol. It was sweeping. It included people who planned the attacks, those who carried it out, people who beat and electroshocked and used bear spray on police officers. Some of these people are being celebrated among Republicans. We should note this is also not a popular move. The Associated Press conducted a poll of U.S. adults about these policies. Only about 2 in 10 supported pardoning most of the rioters. How has this been received in Washington?
There's been tremendous pushback. A lot of Republicans have spoken out, but mostly Democrats. A lot of Republicans have been, I would imagine, concerned about speaking out. But nonetheless, for example, we have one Republican from California who said, I don't agree with the pardoning of people that committed violence or even damage to property. He said, if you climbed through a window, I think you probably knew what you were doing was against the law, and I don't think it was appropriate to pardon them. That's Representative Jay Obernolt of California. He is a Republican. Stuart Rhodes, he's the leader, the founder of the group Oath Keepers. Oath Keepers was supposedly very much involved. In fact, I shouldn't say supposedly, but was very much involved in the January 6th riot at the Capitol. Stuart Rhodes was convicted and sentenced to 18 years in prison for seditious conspiracy, which is about as serious as you can get in terms of a crime against the United States of America. He was pardoned, sentence commuted, rather. And so at the White House, I believe it was Wednesday, yes, it was Wednesday, during a small event announcing an infrastructure bill regarding artificial intelligence, the press pool asked the president about pardoning people who beat police officers. In one case in particular, Officer Fanon, who was tased and then beaten and suffered a heart attack and a brain injury. The people involved in that pardoned. And so Donald Trump was asked, how could you pardon somebody who did that? And he goes, well, did we pardon or did we commute? We'll have to look at that. And that created a whole lot of consternation, because to pardon everybody and to look at it after the fact is exactly the opposite of what the Attorney General nominee Pam Bondi, President Trump's Attorney General nominee, said in her confirmation hearing. She said we would take it on a case-by-case basis. Obviously, if there were people who committed violent acts, including those who beat police officers, we would, take a second look. We wouldn't do that, but we would take all the other cases on a case-by-case basis. So the President of the United States undermined his Attorney General nominee right away by just issuing these blanket pardons and commutations.
And his vice president, right? J.D. Vance was on one of the Sunday shows just, a week or two ago, saying that, of course he's not going to pardon the violent offenders.
Right, and he did. And then said, well, we'll take a look at it later. But that's kind of opposite of how you would expect something to be done, right? You don't release people from prison and then look at it later. You look at it first, and then you release them from prison, right?
Yeah, I guess moving fast is the name of the administration.
Yeah, as I said, flooding the zone is a technique that we were accustomed to in the first Trump administration, and now we're becoming reaccustomed to it.
Well, you're sanitizing a little bit because it was Steve Bannon, the great Trump ally, who said flooding the zone with excrement. I'll just use that as the euphemism for the word he said.
Yes. I'll leave that to Steve Bannon. Yes.
All right. Well, you mentioned Pam Bondi, Trump's Attorney General nominee. Let's talk a little about the confirmation process, because Tammy Duckworth of Illinois has been one of the leading voices among Democrats against Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth. She's an Iraq War veteran herself. She got a lot of attention for one of the questions she asked Hegseth at that hearing. This is last week, about the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN for short.
Can you name the importance of at least one of the nations in the ASEAN, and what type of agreement we have with at least one of those nations? And how many nations are in ASEAN, by the way?
I couldn't tell you the exact amount of nations in that, but I know we have allies in South Korea and Japan and in AUKUS with Australia, trying to work on submarines with them.
Mr. Hegseth, none of those countries are in ASEAN.
Across.
None of those three countries that you've mentioned are in ASEAN. I suggest you do a little homework before you prepare for these types of negotiations.
All right, for the record, there are 10 countries in ASEAN: Brunei, Cambodia, Indonesia, Laos, Malaysia, Myanmar, Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam. And I think Timor-Leste is going to be added soon. Where do things stand, Linda, with Mr. Hegseth's nomination?
There are a lot of problems with the Hegseth nomination, but I'm going to say to you my crystal ball prediction is that Pete Hegseth will be confirmed as Defense Secretary nominee today.
What about some of the other nominees as this confirmation process is playing out? Early on, there was Matt Gaetz, the AG nominee, who withdrew after all the criticism and allegations about improper relationships and payments to an underage woman for sexual relations. And there were a lot of questions raised about a number of the other nominees, and yet everybody seems to be doing okay now.
Yeah, Matt Gaetz did drop out of consideration eventually and denied all the allegations against him, despite the fact of evidentiary material. Pam Bondi became the replacement nominee for Attorney General. Her hearing went fairly well, although her question was that this was very dissatisfactory to a lot of Democrats on the committee, was whether she could stand up to Donald Trump. Apparently, Donald Trump just steamrolled her because of the pardon situation we just discussed. Now, Pete Hegseth has had a lot of the same allegations as Matt Gaetz in terms of sexual impropriety, but you can add to that the financial impropriety, drunkenness on the job, even in military uniform, various other behaviors, being verbally assaultive, dismissing women as not being allowed, should not be even have the right to vote or have be in the workforce, things he said while extremely drunk, etc. But he is, as I say, probably going to be confirmed today. The Senate confirmed John Ratcliffe for head of the Central Intelligence Agency by an overwhelming bipartisan vote of 74 to 25. The first nominee who became now an official member of the cabinet is Marco Rubio, the Republican senator from Florida, widely liked, quite frankly, on both sides of the aisle, and was confirmed by an overwhelming margin. Kristi Noem, Homeland Security Secretary nominee. She is the governor of South Dakota and a very strong Trump loyalist. She is on track to be confirmed as early as next week. So things are moving along. There has been an overwhelming belief for every president that they deserve to have the cabinet. They deserve to be surrounded by the people they choose. However, when it comes to Trump, some of these are extremely controversial, and they may end up essentially being confirmed regardless.
All right, Linda, just about a minute left while we still have you. The White House had a less than stellar reputation for how it treated the press during the first Trump administration. How's it been operating in the early days of this second Trump administration?
We use the term building the plane while flying it. And that's kind of what's been going on right now. The schedules are non-existent, completely fluid, no information from the press office in terms of where we're supposed to be and when. You would get a schedule the night before, and sometimes we don't even get it until we're right smack in the middle of that particular day. I understand that things can be rocky when you start. This is the most rocky I have seen. And I have covered several administrations. I will also say that the interaction between President Trump and the media is pretty much as it was in the first administration. He can be very...
Which we should say, it's a lot more than you got access with Biden, right? I mean, Trump will answer yes. sort of off the cuff on the way to the chopper or whatever, right?
Right. We call chopper talk, yes.
Yeah.
He did that this morning, by the way. He had some chopper talk. So, yes, a lot more access. The difference is that access quality access? With Biden, we did not have to fact check absolutely everything that was being said. Now, obviously, there is a tremendous need for a lot of what's being said to be fact checked.
And we're gonna have to leave it there, I'm afraid. Linda Kenyon, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us. As always, more to come here on the 21st Show. Stay with us.